For critical information ignored by the mainstream media, log on to davidicke.com/headlines now.
From Feature Story News in Washington, I'm Rebecca Foster. Russian opposition activist and anti-corruption blogger Alexei Navalny has received a 5-year suspended sentence for embezzlement. The politician, who planned to run against Vladimir Putin in the 2018 presidential election, denounced the verdict as politically motivated. The sentence may prevent Mr. Navalny from running for office, but the activist says he will appeal it and continue his fight against the Kremlin. Daria Bondarchuk reports from Moscow.
Alexei Navalny was found guilty of heading a group that embezzled timber worth some $500,000 from a state-run timber company nearly 9 years ago. In 2013, Mr. Navalny was convicted for the same crime and appealed the decision at the European Court of Human Rights. It ruled that the Russian court's decision was illegal and the Supreme Court of Russia had to revoke it, sending the case for retrial in November last year. Mr. Navalny tweeted during the hearing that the judge's ruling was a replica of the first trial's verdict. Mr. Navalny told journalists on Wednesday that he will appeal the second guilty verdict the same way and claimed that it would not stop him from running in the 2018 presidential elections. Daria Bondarchuk, Moscow.
U.S. President Donald Trump has launched a scathing attack on America's courts, accusing them of putting the country's safety at risk by overruling his travel ban. He told an audience of sheriffs and police that he was elected to bring law and order to the country, but the courts are now poised to stop him. Simon Marks has more from Washington.
Never before has a president expressed these sentiments about judges who are guaranteed a role in government under the terms of America's Constitution.
Courts seem to be so political, and it would be so great for our justice system if they would be able to read a statement and do what's right.
President Trump said he didn't want to accuse the courts of bias, especially before a decision in the travel ban case is rendered. But he's laying the groundwork for rejecting it if it doesn't go his way.
The United Nations has appealed for $2.1 billion to provide emergency food and other supplies to Yemen. The organization says 12 million people there are facing famine after 2 years of war. Here's our United Nations correspondent, Lorna Shattuck.
Catastrophic and rapidly deteriorating. That's how the UN's humanitarian coordinator has described the situation in Yemen, which has been divided by nearly 2 years of civil war. The UN says that nearly 19 million Yemenis, over two-thirds of the population, need assistance and protection. Of those, they say that 3.3 million people, including over 2 million children, are acutely malnourished. The organisation adds that ongoing airstrikes are not only causing civilian casualties, but also damaging public infrastructure, including ports, roads and bridges, and hampering the delivery of humanitarian aid.
From bureaus worldwide, this is FSN.
Thanks very much, Rebecca Foster, and a warm welcome to the programme to you. Hope you're well. It's Wednesday. Is it the 8th? I think it is the 8th of February 2017. Got two terrific guests lined up for you this Wednesday, as usual. Tweet at Richie Allen Show, email richie@richieallen.co.uk. Welcome to the programme.
Broadcasting live from the great city of Manchester, England. This is the Richie Allen Show on davidicke.com. It's the Richie Allen Show, brought to you in association with davidicke.com. And now, live from Manchester, England, here is Richie Allen.
Good to be with you as always. Thanks for tuning in. Coming up in this edition of the program, we're going to be off to Frankfurt this hour. We'll be joined by Norbert Herring, who's a financial journalist, economist, and he wrote an extraordinary book entitled The Abolition of Cash and the Consequences. Now, he believes Washington is behind India and Sweden recently becoming committed to cashless societies. Are those countries being used as guinea pigs? I was asking this question today on social media. What part has George Soros played in this? You don't want to miss this in the first hour. Norbert Herring joins me. Now, Kevin Barrett, my old friend, the academic, the blogger, the writer and broadcaster, joins us in the second hour. Now, he was only on the programme in early January. But Michael Rubin, the American Enterprise Institute scholar and also a member of the Council on Foreign Relations, He's been putting out videos pushing for the redrawing of the map of the Middle East. This is serious stuff, this. And at a time when the independent media, almost in its entirety, has jumped on the Donald Trump bandwagon. And guys like me are thinking, we have to balance the amount of coverage we give to the presidential election result with everything else. And I think we've been doing okay with that. But there comes a point when you have to say, no, we've got to cover this stuff. We've got to give you a different opinion. Because I know that you primarily get your information from the independent media, not just from davidicke.com, not just from us, not just from alternatecurrentradio.com, but you get it from everywhere. And 99 out of 100 organisations are telling you that Donald Trump is John Wayne. He's a thorn in the side of the establishment. He is the answer to tyranny, and he is the answer to the banks, to Wall Street, and to, well, the elite, to the Illuminati, whatever you want to call them. He isn't. So we're going to get into that in the second hour with Kevin Barrett and much more besides. Been an interesting old Wednesday. I think this week is flying, actually. It's been a very quick old week thus far. It really has. And it's been a busy old day today, actually. Kind of juggling around various things today with the programme. And before I go any further, 6 minutes past the hour, always reminds me of Howard Stern, that. If you ever want a good laugh, read a book called Private Parts. Forget the film, which is very good. Read the book about Stern's problems when he joined NBC in New York. And giving the time and the weather was a funny thing. I'm always mindful of it. Look, I mentioned today on Facebook, I put it out there, and I know because of Facebook and its algorithms that it might not have reached everybody intended for it to be reached. But next week, this coming Monday, I think is February 13th, the programme will broadcast at the new time of 7 p.m. GMT, going back an hour, 7 till 9 p.m. GMT. Now, I was very pleased today with the reaction to that on Facebook and on Twitter, because people don't generally like a change. And I knew there would be some people happy with that, it would suit them, but I thought there would be one or two more who mightn't like that, might have a problem with it. But there's some very good reasons for it. One, the start time of 8 p.m. is right bang in the middle of lunchtime on the Pacific coast. That's always been an issue for me with regard to getting guests and inviting guests on from that part of the world. But the other thing is the day. I produce, edit and create this programme by myself, entirely alone. There's a song in there somewhere. There are no violins playing for me, by the way. But I do all of that, and I do it from the very early a.m. By around about 5 p.m., 5:30 p.m., I'm generally ready to go. It's an incredibly long day. And we thought, by moving it from 7 to 9, it wouldn't really impact on you. You could still hear it live. The podcast would be online a little bit earlier than usual. It'll be online now at around about 9:20 p.m., as opposed to 10:20 p.m. It'll give me a little bit of a life after the show, and it'll make life infinitely more easy for me. But, like I said, not to downplay the importance of the Pacific coast, which we get a lot of guests from the west coast of America, and also from Arizona and places like that, mountain time, Pacific time. So that was also significant in the decision. And I did think about it for a long time. I make easy decisions, or not important decisions, very quickly. But decisions that are important, I do tend to dwell on for quite a bit. I've been thinking about this since the autumn. So there you are. If you put on notice now, from next Monday, 13th of February 2017, we will be broadcasting live at 7 p.m. GMT. I've spoken to my broadcast partners about it. They're all happy with it. They don't have a problem with it. And it's all hunky-dory. Our end. How about that? Right. Leaving that for now. There's a lot going on today with regards to the news. There's still a lot of talk today in various commercial national media about the Amnesty International report. I'm not going to get into this because I spoke at length about this in the monologue yesterday. but the Amnesty International report claiming that 13,000 people have been killed. There are some brilliant articles out there today absolutely decimating and dismantling the Amnesty International claims. And I've got to mention one of them. In fact, I'm going to tweet it out as soon as I can. I'm going to mention one or two of them. I'm going to tweet them out. But there's been a couple of brilliant articles. And one of them, by a journalist, will be on this programme tomorrow. I'll tell you more about that a little bit later on as well. So it's exactly 10 minutes past the hour. It was brought to my attention today that Alex Jones, in a recent InfoWars broadcast, said that he would die for Donald Trump. He would die for him. And I was sent an email today from a listener who said, don't mention my name, Richie, whatever you do. And I mean, I wouldn't anyway. Let's say Bob emailed me today. And he emailed me a list of tweets from Alex Jones, Paul Watson, and one or two other reporters / presenters for Infowars.com. And the gist of the tweets were, or the gist of the email was, Richie, look at the similarity of the content of these tweets. Each tweet or each second tweet is a tweet about some country in the world where some young man or woman of Asian origin has committed some sort of crime. And alongside this, you have retweets of Donald Trump whenever Trump decides to tweet something. Retweets of supporters of Donald Trump, and that's what it's been reduced to. So I heard the audio today. I didn't drag it out. I don't want to subject you to it. But the editor-in-chief and the head honcho at Infowars.com is now telling people that he's prepared to die for Donald Trump, no matter how. And I said this yesterday in a monologue, and this is going to be a feature. Like I said, I don't want to be doing this every single night. We don't want to be reporting on the movements of Donald Trump every single night, but we can't not do it. We can't not do it regularly as he continues to appoint people. Neocons, Goldman Sachs bankers, people in favour of privatising education. We've got to tell you. We've got to give you that other point of view because you're not getting it anywhere else in the independent media. Yes, of course, if you're a listener to Maria Heller, you're getting it. You're getting the truth. If you listen to and if you subscribe to davidicke.com, you're getting it. You're getting the alternative point of view. But outside of that, in the independent media, you're getting Trump is great. And Trump is draining the swamp. And you're getting told ludicrous things like, well, Trump kind of has to appoint these people because there's nobody else. And he's biding his time. And these are people now, remember. People like Alex Jones, whom I remember the night Trump was elected, it came as a surprise to me. I was convinced, as were a lot of people, but that doesn't matter whether a lot of people were or not. It was me. I was convinced that Clinton was the chosen one to further the NATO encroachment on Russia, to further the baiting of Russia and China, and so on, so on, so on. But I was wrong. I now believe that Trump, that's a good way of putting it, Trump was chosen all along. He was the chosen one. And on the night he was elected, I was reading and watching a variety of blogs and online radio and television shows in the independent media. And I do remember Alex Jones crying and telling Paul Joseph Watson that he loved him, that this was it, tyranny was over. And more importantly, they were rubbing their hands with glee. And I played all of these audio clips before. I'm not going to play them again. Rubbing their hands with glee that now Hillary Clinton was going to go to prison. This is what they were telling you. Clinton was going to go to prison. This was it. Donald Trump was in now. All of these people were going to be arrested. And Clinton was going to go to prison. Now, if Alex Jones hadn't behaved the way he has behaved since November, I would almost feel sorry for him. Because I believe that the desire to see Hillary Clinton in handcuffs being escorted from her Manhattan apartment and taken into custody, I have no doubt that desire on the part of Alex Jones is genuine and it's completely real and it's sincere. But the behaviour of InfoWars and Watson and all the people associated with them since means I've got very little sympathy for them. Now, Donald Trump has no interest in going after his very good friends, the Clintons. Neither does the Justice Department. They never will. Clinton's next stop is a television programme. She'll be on The View as a permanent guest, or she'll be given her own programme. She'll do something like that, and she will subsidise that. That's a bad word to use. What will go along with that will be a world speaking tour, where along with the other criminals, Tony Blair and George Osborne and Barack Obama, soon to be on that circuit as well, they'll get six-figure sums for speaking to students at various Ivy League universities and basically telling whoppers of lies. That's what's going to happen with Hillary Clinton. You're not going to go to prison anytime soon. And with Alex Jones and those like him, it's not about a lack of humility. It's about something far deeper and far more serious than just a lack of humility. It's not about a lack of humility. I get emails all the time, Richie, why won't these people admit they got it wrong? It's not about humility. These people have been co-opted, whether consciously or subconsciously, they've been taken over. And now they prop up the system every bit as much as the mainstream news networks they claim to be fighting against. They're exactly the same now. I would die for Donald Trump, said Alex Jones, who would have you believe he's an independent journalist, reporting fairly and without bias and without prejudice on current affairs in the United States of America. No, he would die now for Donald Trump. A man who broke every promise he made within a week, within a day of becoming president, let alone the inauguration, within a day of winning the presidency, he was telling people, I don't want to go after Clinton. Changing his stance on climate change, which he used to say was nonsense. And everything else that goes with it, you know. So we're going to report on these things as we go along. We'll do it in a way that is designed that it will never get boring. It'll never become dull for you. I do understand, because I do listen to what you have to tell me. I do read your tweets, and I do hear you when you say, you know, it's a, you know, Trump is the subject of every third or every fourth guest you have coming on. It's Trump, 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 Trump. It is, and it's going to be, because that's where the focus is right now, is on Donald Trump. Keep your tweets coming in. It's at Richie Allen Show on Twitter. Richie at richieallen.co.uk is my email address. Yes, so Kevin Barrett coming up in the second hour. We're off to Frankfurt in Germany this hour. That's something you don't want to miss. We're going to be talking cashless society with Norbert Haring. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. I got a variety of pronunciations for that today. I think it's absolutely right. We hope it is. Right, we're going to take a very quick break. When we come back then, more to tell you, and then we'll get our first guest on.
Do not risk putting another pound in your bank account until you've heard this message. It's Jim Rickards here, best-selling author of Currency Wars and The Death of Money. But today I'm urging you to claim a free copy of my brand new book, The Road to Ruin. Visit theroadtoruin.co.uk for full details now. Inside, I uncover the financial elite's secret ICE-9 plan to take full control of your hard-earned cash. To see how, visit theroadtoruin.co.uk right away. It's not too late to prepare. Claim your free copy at theroadtoruin.co.uk today.
Looking to arrange a mortgage? Confused by all the deals available? Let Manchester Mortgages do the work for you. Take advantage of our free mortgage review offer throughout February and March and see if we can save you money. We are whole of market brokers with access to hundreds of mortgage schemes across the UK. Call us on 0161 706 0242 or go to manchestermortgages.co.uk. Your home may be repossessed if you do not keep up repayments on your mortgage. Manchester Mortgages are a trading style of mortgages for you, North West Limited, who are authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority.
There's a place high in the mountains of Spain, a sanctuary where souls gather from all around the globe to learn about themselves and experience powerful changes in the way we see our world. They become awakened to their gifts and their power to heal others. Become part of this ever-growing worldwide family of unique, pure energy healing practitioners. Discover how amazing you truly are. Go to www.markbajerski.com. It could just change your life forever.
All eyes on Manchester. Saturday, March 4th, 2017. The Awakening at Bowler's Exhibition Centre, Manchester. world-leading ufologists, ancient alien theory experts, spiritual workers, and truth seekers descend into Manchester. Join the stars of the Ancient Aliens TV series and the leading figures in the field of ufology and ancient alien theories. Eric Von Daniken, author of the hit book Chariots of the Gods, and Emmy Award winner Linda Moulton Howe will present together for the first time in the UK. In between talks on UFOs, truth about Stonehenge, energy work, spirituality, life-sized UFO, live interview with an alien. And if that's not enough, realign your spirit and soul in our meditation and healing dome. Join us Saturday, March 4th as we seek the answers. Get tickets now at www.awakeningufo.com.
For critical information ignored by the mainstream media, log on to davidicke.com/headlines now.
Welcome back to the program. 21 minutes past the hour. It's your Richie Allen Show, broadcasting live, of course, on davidicke.com, Fab Radio 2, alternatecurrentradio.com, and the TuneIn app. So I'm glad so many of you are happy or are not bothered one way or the other about the change in time beginning. The programme beginning at 7 p.m. from this coming Monday onwards, 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. And that's great. It's going to work out great for me. And I'm glad that nobody seems to be too concerned about that. In fact, people on Central European time, I've had a tweet from somebody in Brussels there. Hello, my friend in Brussels, who said it suits them. And it does, because we have a huge audience in Europe. That's David in Brussels, who said the time suits him. I wish you were on air on Fridays too. Let me just let you in on a little secret then. A little secret. We have been planning for some time. Lots of things. And you don't get to do things as quick as you want to do them. But one of the things I wanted to do was, and I've been discussing this with somebody, I won't mention who it is, was to do a phone-in show on Friday. And I wouldn't present it. I wouldn't present it at all. I couldn't do that. But I obviously, we have this wonderful studio here, wonderful studio, and somebody close to me who's a very good broadcaster has expressed an interest in doing a phone-in show on Friday. And that's something that we might be able to get going in March on Friday evenings. That would be great, that. Between 7 and 9, or between 8 and 10, whichever it worked out. And it would be a complete phone-in show, no agenda, phones open from the first minute till the end. And when there are more details on that, I'll gladly give them to you. Alrighty, let's have some music then. And then, as I said, we're off to Frankfurt in Deutschland. And it's going to be fascinating. Norbert Haring joins the programme, financial journalist and author, to talk about the cashless society agenda, which is very serious. In the meantime, this is the Smashing Pumpkins, Billy Corgan, and a track, called 1979, back in two. Tonight, Smashing Pumpkins in 1979 on The Richie Allen Show in association with DavidIke.com. This is an incredibly serious issue. It's one of the most serious issues, I think, facing people and the sovereignty of people going forward. And I don't say that lightly. You will know by now, because we mentioned this, we talked about this back in December, that India moved 86% of its currency, took it out of circulation, just like that. Reported in Forbes magazine back in December, leaving hundreds of millions of people without the means to engage economically, to buy the things they wanted and needed, and so on. Let me read you from that Forbes article, just a brief couple of lines. India's demonetization scheme was a unilateral initiative that was planned in secret by a small group of insiders tied in with the upper echelons of India's government. The strategy was to instantly nullify all 500 and 1,000 rupee banknotes, the most common currency denominations in the country, and then eventually replace them with newly designed, more secure 500 and 2,000 rupee notes. That's what Forbes said at the time. That's not strictly true, that last bit. Now, we've seen similar moves in places like Sweden and even County Cork, of course, from my home place, my homestead, Ireland, has talked about and has initiated schemes to remove cash completely from the city. This is not a joke. Let's welcome our first guest to the programme then. He's got plenty to say about this. He's a financial journalist, an economist, and he wrote a critically acclaimed book called The Abolition of Cash and the Consequences. He's live in Frankfurt right now, and I'm going to tweet his blog, by the way, because his blog is in English. I'm going to tweet that out while we're chatting with him. Let's welcome to the programme Norbert Haring. Norbert, welcome to the programme. Good evening. How are you?
Good evening. I'm fine, thanks.
And thanks so much for coming on. I'm delighted to be chatting with you. Norbert, just before you and I talk about this issue, I did mention to you earlier on that former spokesman from the Greek finance ministry, Dimitris Yiannopoulos, was on the programme last night, and he said a couple of things that probably won't surprise you. He said Greece is a concentration camp these days, and he said the European Union is basically the Fourth Reich. Now, it did occur to me when he said that German men and women might be sensitive to such terminology and they might find the wording very strong. Do you want to give me a quick comment on what he said? Do you agree with him? What's your take on what's happening to Greece right now?
Well, I'm afraid I'm not majority German opinion on this issue. I do sympathize very much with the Greek. I just saw some statistics from the IMF which show that it's worse than the Great Depression in Greece, and that's just for, you could even call it spite before some principles, because they could have easily been helped, but there were just some principles enforced because they're weak and because we elected the wrong government. So it's really close to a crime what has been done to the Greek. I would say that too, yeah.
Norbert.
And we're also being used as a guinea pig. That also for, I mean, this is not their worst problems, but all sorts of anti-cash measures are being imposed there by the Troika. The government doesn't mind so much because it plays in their hand, but the EU Commission, which is a big anti-cash warrior, and the IMF and the ECB, all against cash, where the Troika there that basically rules against above the government, and we're trying out all sorts of stuff there. They're doing a lot of similar stuff to the Indians.
Now, you, we're going to talk about your excellent article shortly, which you wrote even a month ago or thereabouts, and as promised, I'm going to tweet this out. I want people to follow you. We're all about finding people like you, Norbert, because it's not often that people like you tell the truth. And this is a fact. It's the reason we had Dimitris Yiannopoulos on the programme yesterday. Before we talk about what's happened in India, you mentioned there Greece being used as a guinea pig. Is it punitive? I mean, you said it's punishing. Is it in some way designed, what's happening to Greece, to terrify other countries who might step out of line or who might challenge the hegemony of the Troika, the European Central Bank and the European Union? Is it punitive to warn others?
Most certainly. I mean, if it hadn't been Syriza being elected, but some conservative government, they could have expected a lot more leniency. And you could see it with Portugal, too. They had the screws pretty tightened with their new governments. I think they elected a leftist government. They're sort of lucky that at the time when the screws were tightened on them, the Spanish had an election and they wanted to help the conservatives there win. So, and it was kind of hard to distinguish between Portugal and Spain. It would have been too obvious. So they got away fairly lightly, and they're also not picking as much of a fight as Syriza. So, but you could observe that a lot, that whenever a leftist government was elected or in danger of being elected, that would not have done all these harsh austerity measures so lightly. They tightened the screws pretty severely, and suddenly every deficit target and all that these things were becoming a lot more important suddenly.
By the way, Norbert's blog, his excellent website, can be found at Norbert Haring, that's H-A-E-R-I-N-G. If I'm mispronouncing your surname, Norbert, don't hesitate to tell me, by the way.
Oh, you're doing pretty good. It's hard.
It is difficult, isn't it? Yeah, yeah. It looks like Haring or Herring. Norbert Haring.
Haring is perfect.
Yeah. Haring is perfect. So it's Norbert Haring, H-A-E-R-I-N-G, .de. /EN, and we're tweeting that out. You've got to read this, man. Norbert, your article is brilliant. So, certain vested interests in the United States are behind India's push towards the cashless society. Who are these interests? People are telling me George Soros' name is popping up all over the place. Who are these interests, and why are they doing it?
Well, on my story, it's more Bill Gates. The Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation is one of the biggest bankrollers, if not the biggest bankroller, of a whole variety of initiatives that go against cash. Although first it was always sold as financial inclusion, which was translated as digitalizing finance, so that it would be more easy to bring it to the people. But then it morphed into really going against cash. There's actually a Better Than Cash Alliance that was formed in 2012. Most money, presumably, is coming from a Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. So that's Microsoft, basically. So the tech and IT companies in the U.S., the big ones, are one big group that's behind that. The other ones, obviously, are the payment services providers. That's also globally dominated by the U.S. companies, and these are in that Better Than Cash Alliance. That's Visa and MasterCard. And then there's also big banks. Citigroup is in there, and some foundations like the Ford Foundation, which well, in the past, at least, they have often been involved when certain dark money had to be distributed that shouldn't be traced back to certain government sources or whatever. And there is USAID, the development finance company of the U.S. government. And so these are forming the Better Than Cash Alliance, which has the goal of pushing back cash worldwide. And it's also very obvious why we would have an interest in that, because the tech and IT companies were going into payment services, but we're also providing the infrastructure, and these U.S. companies are globally dominating. There's the payment services provider. They want to make money off every liter of milk that you're buying. So
every,
if you don't do it in cash, they get their percentage.
Wow.
And there's the American government, which has the interest of these American companies at heart. They make a lot of money, like the current account gets a lot of money from all these exports of payment services. There's a huge surplus in that. And of course, it's also a big source of power for the U.S. government if they can control the international payment system.
Norbert, I said wow there because you just described a massive conflict of interest with the tech companies designing the software for this, but at the same time obviously benefiting from it. When you mentioned Bill and Melinda Gates, is it fair to suggest that somebody like Gates and his wife and the Gates Foundation would be chosen as a vehicle with which to sell this to people because their public image is quite good? Now, I have a lot of problems with Bill Gates and what Bill Gates is doing.
That would make a lot of sense, certainly, to choose them if they
wouldn't
let
it?
Themselves be chosen, yes.
Wouldn't it? How interesting. Now, we what have we learned since this happened in India in December? What do we know? What has it meant for people in that country? I'll just give you a quick tweet before you answer that. Himanshi is living in India and just outside Delhi, in fact. And she's tweeted us to say she's listening in Delhi now. It's in the small hours of Thursday morning there. And she said, e-transactions are now used more and more. What do we know about what impact it's had on Indian people there?
Well, yeah, I mean, first of all, it was not known. It wasn't botched or anything. That it would be a terrible hardship of the for the people was known. Like, there was a, that's what I was writing about. There was a partnership of USAID involving the Better Than Cash Foundation and the Indian Finance Ministry to push back cash. That's been going on since 2015. There have been other close links even since 2013. So the various U.S. groups were very, very much involved. So I would take issue with that. It was a closed circle around the Prime Minister and the Finance Minister. That, I think, these stories are to deflect attention from these known U.S. links because they were in the open. They just had to be deflected from.
And you mentioned, Norbert, you mentioned USAID there. This is why my listeners are mentioning George Soros, because he's connected, obviously, with USAID. So it's the usual suspects. So this is being... Yeah.
So you were asking why... I was saying it was known. So during this partnership, there were studies made, and in these studies, you can read that only half of the Indians have a bank account, and even of that other half, a very large proportion wasn't used. Probably a lot of them are phony or something, just for fraud or something. So a very big part of the majority of the Indians don't have a bank account. And more than 90% of transactions have been done in cash. So it was totally clear and known that it would be a disaster for the people, that they couldn't just do it digitally or something, that they would just not have cash. And that's what happened. Like all these people in the shadow economy, it's not like not being able to buy stuff. They couldn't earn their living. They depend from day to day to make enough money to buy food for their children and stuff by doing small services, driving a rickshaw or whatever, and they couldn't find anybody anymore for weeks or even months who had the cash to pay them, and they just didn't have any means to do that digitally. So people were starving and didn't have enough to eat because of that, and that was known, and it was intended to inflict hardship on all these traders so that they would really... at the first opportunity, and if they could afford it at all, get something to do digital payment. And I'm pretty sure it was also intended that there would be that international uproar and everything, because now everybody in every country knows that it's dangerous not to be able to do digital payment if your government can do these things to you. So very effective in terms of getting digital payments up and running better.
Incredible. So it sounds like what's happened in India is a massive scientific experiment, and they're watching for the reaction, how it's perceived around the rest of the world, how the Indians, the Indian men and women, how they react to it, how they cope with it. It's just a big experiment, right?
We're talking like that. Like if you, what I've been doing after that happened was just reading up on things that have been happening before, press statements from this partnership and all that. And they were talking about it being an example, what we were trying to do, a scalable model that could be transferred to somewhere else. We weren't letting out what we were planning. We were just talking about experiments in a single city, so they disguised it pretty well, so that it just looked like we were looking for the right city to make these experiments, and nobody knew it would be the whole of India. But we were talking about it being an example for the rest of the world and other countries, and this Better Than Cash Association and other similar groups, which are very well connected and tied up with some UN organization. The World Bank is heavily involved, governments are part, and they're active in all sorts of places like Nigeria, Kenya, and they're very busy, so it's not like we're just doing that in India.
So Nigeria and places like this is what's coming next. We've had a tweet from Mark, who tweets, cashless society. If the banks make bad bets and become insolvent, they can legally confiscate the deposits of their customers to balance their books. Now, we saw this in Cyprus. Is this the big worry, Norbert, that the reason why the IMF, the Troika, the European Central Bank, the World Bank, these Bretton Woods institutions, I think they're tyrants, these are criminals. This is the job. This is what it's all about here. This is about the coming of the bail-in, right?
Yes, we have the bail-in legislation, so it's the law now in Europe that that creditors have to be shaved first. And who is that? It's not like big finance who was stupid enough to give some bank a big loan. It's you and me and everybody who has money at the bank. And so it's clear that they have their money taken away if the bank gets in trouble. So if they have that rule, they can't do anything other than taking away cash and making it hard to get your money. Actually, I did an experiment for my book. I went to my bank, and by rights and rules, I can take my money out any day without giving notice or something. And I just wanted 15,000 euros, and they wouldn't give it to me.
They wouldn't give it. They would not.
Because I stayed there and just refused to go away, and they couldn't refuse it legally. After letting me sit there half an hour and calling the police, see if they wanted to check or all that, they gave it to me eventually just because I insisted, but they would have sent anybody else away who would have believed them, but they just didn't have it there.
Norbert, excuse me for interrupting. They called the police, did they, in a bid?
Yeah, that's routine. I mean, all this money laundering stuff is also a way to make you feel like a criminal if you deal with cash, if you have any kind of amounts like more than 5,000 or something that you want to take from the bank. They make you sit there and wait. They call the police so that they can come if they think it's fishy. Now, I was in a suit and everything, and that was fine, and they didn't come. But if I have some Eastern accent and speak bad German and say I want 7,000 euros of my own money, it's not unlikely that the police comes. And I've from my lawyer, I've heard another case where somebody had their accounts canceled just because he's using cash a lot and repeatedly took out cash from a money machine of more than 1,000 euros, and they just canceled his account with no warning or anything. It just said, no, account is canceled. So they make it, they say it's against money laundering, but it also works perfectly that if they have these bail-in rules, and everybody knows about Cyprus, and then there's rumors that a bank is in trouble, and you can get your cash out, everybody would run.
Of course.
And these rules would just cause fires everywhere. But if you can't get your cash out because there isn't any more cash or they only give you 100 euros, then your money is locked in and they can very calmly decide whether they take away 10 or 20 or 30% to make the bank whole again.
I want to just remind our listeners, we've got Norbert Herring on the line, norberthering.de/EN. Norbert's book, by the way, is The Abolition of Cash and the Consequences. Outstanding to have him on the program.
It's
today.
In German, by the way, just so that nobody is disappointed Googling it.
Well, you got to, seriously, Norbert, you got to get that translated into English.
Yeah, I'm thinking about writing the follow-up, which covers that stuff that I was talking about on how this is important for the U.S. and the U.S. control of the financial system and all that. So I'm not sure yet whether
I'll
write it in English or German.
Get on it. I want to mention, by the way, and again, it's a huge thrill for us, and we're not being subservient to you. We're not procrastinating in front of you, but it's a massive thrill to us when people who've seen the inside of the system have the courage to come out and call things the way they are. You and I both know, and some of our listeners won't know, but you and I know that tech firms in the United States, DARPA and other firms like that, they've patented eye scanning equipment in order, you know, for payments to be made using eye scans. This has been patented. This has been developed. They've also patented cashless payment wristbands. I mean, Norbert, it's not an exaggeration to say this is straight from the pages of George Orwell. This is about tyrannical control,
yeah.
Right?
I mean, George Orwell could hardly have dreamed of it, but it's amazing how close he came to what we have now. Actually, MasterCard has recently patented something or put the application in on how to calculate people's weight and size from their purchases. So it's they're patenting abuse of our data. They would use our purchases that they know about from their cards, estimate our weight and size from our shoes we buy and the clothing, and sell that to the airlines so that they can sell us the right seat or something. I mean, it's absolutely tremendous that they want to have abuse of data patented, that certain way of abusing it. It's really amazing. And, of course, I mean, there's so much information. If PayPal and MasterCard know everything we buy, and that includes like a journal we buy. I mean, if you don't dare to subscribe to a journal, that's kind of off the beaten track. You buy it at the kiosk for cash. You can't do that anymore. So any journal that's kind of off the government line, you might be on a list. And all this information is consolidated. It's not like MasterCard has some and PayPal has some. There are companies that consolidate all this information. They collect it themselves, or they buy it from all these, all the websites, all the payment providers, put it together in a file, and anybody who has the money can buy it. So it's all there. And it's a huge file with all information about you, and if you can't, even if you're trying to preserve some privacy by doing a lot in cash so that it's not registered, you can't do that anymore. Which makes it a lot more valuable, because you know that everything is in there, so the information becomes a lot better, and that is really terrible. And the other thing is, you saw it when with WikiLeaks, all it took was for the U.S. government, no parliament, no court or anything, just the president or somebody calling MasterCard, Visa, PayPal, American Express, and asking them, oh, please don't do business with WikiLeaks. And that was enough that WikiLeaks couldn't get any money anymore, couldn't collect
That's
money,
right.
and had severe financial problems. You can do that to anybody, and it's done already. Like the U.S. government, if they impose some sanctions on Iran or something for financial deals with them, other countries don't have them, like Germany. And there's a company making totally legal financial deals with them. The Americans just put them on a terror list, which they can do unilaterally. And then no finance provider, finance company will make any deal with you anymore, and you're basically broke.
You're finished.
You can't even buy an iPhone anymore.
And you know what? And I'm not talking about me personally, even though we have a massive audience. But how long before independent media like us who have guests like you on the program, how long before they make it impossible for our listeners to make financial donations, for us to pay our bills? This is what's coming
You're
down the line.
You're just spreading fake news anyway.
You see? That's right. That's right.
That's the fake news business.
That's the fake news business.
But certainly with money, they can do it a lot better, yes.
I can't believe we're talking. I'm delighted you're on the program. We've only got about 5 or 6 minutes left. Norbert Herring is on the line, folks. NorbertHerring.de/EN. This is vital that you understand this information. Isn't it obvious then that what people need to do is to start talking to one another and to understand how finance works, how banks lend money out of thin air, how they create money out of nothing, and more importantly, that countries have to become sovereign again and they have to get out of the criminal European Union. That's the answer, Norbert, isn't it? People have to understand that.
Don't make me say it's a criminal European Union.
Well, you don't have to say anything. So,
but the first part, I certainly subscribe. I just come from a place where I was giving a talk on how the money system works in front of teachers who are trying to learn about it, which is hard and important because all the textbooks are kind of weirdly wrong on that. They sort of describe what was going on 300 years ago, and it's absolutely essential that people understand, I agree, and it's essential that they use cash so that it's not possible to criminalize everybody with just minor amount. If it's customary to withdraw 900 pounds and pay with it, then it's much less unusual. That's a big thing that you can do against that. There's not so much. I'm also using the legal way. I'm insisting on paying our public broadcasting fee in cash, which they won't let me do, and I'm in court because of that, because by law it's the legal tender, and the government can't refuse to accept the legal tender, and they do it anyway, and I'm doing that to make our members of parliament wake up, because they're never making money laws. They just let the banks do that together with the central banks. And it's clear to whose benefit it will be if they can do it. So I want to make by causing this legal problem that, of course, cash is tedious, and we would have to make some sort of a better sovereign money that you can also use digitally. I want to force them to do that by just insisting on the law.
Norbert,
so that's another thing you can do.
That's another thing. You're welcome back anytime you want to come back. Look, we don't hide here. I believe personally, and I'm not prone to fanciful notions, and I've heard so many speeches made by people like Bill Gates and others, and I've read the UN 2030 documents. The elites, I believe, those with the money and the power, they ultimately want to reduce the population of this planet. And I think this is there are many reasons for the cashless society, but one of them, I believe, is to starve people. I mean, I really do believe that. Now, I know you probably won't accept that, but that's something I believe is part of the overall agenda of this.
I think it's vicious, but I think that would be an ineffective way to get after that.
You're right. Listen, you're right. It, on its own, it would be, but alongside other things that are going on around the world, it plays its part. Listen, I want to thank you for coming on. It's extraordinary.
Thank you for having me.
Norbert is great. NorbertHaring.de/EN. And please come back anytime you want. We'd love to have you back, Norbert.
Thank you. I'd like to. Bye-bye.
Look after yourself. In Frankfurt tonight, Norbert Haring. Fantastic. Guest, and of course in Frankfurt, eh? There was so much I could have said about Frankfurt, but I didn't want to do that. Fascinating what's happening. It's fascinating what's happening. You know, 3 years ago, nearly 3 years ago, in fact, when things were vastly different for me, and I was going to go back into commercial broadcasting. Not that I was inundated with offers, but I had a couple of offers. And David said, look, this is the way to go. Do a program like this. And one of the things he did say, it pisses you off sometimes. If you know, everybody knows somebody like David. Like I'm not saying they're never wrong, but they're not often wrong. He's wrong from time to time, but he's not often wrong. He said, because I said I would only ever do it if we got people from the system talking about these issues, and I don't think we ever will, so it's a waste of time. And at that time he said, no, it isn't. They will talk to a show like yours. People like that will come on, and they won't mind that we talk about satanic paedophilia, and they won't mind that we talk about other things. They will book them, and they will come, was what he said at the time. And it's extraordinary. And maybe it's because another thing that we've talked about over the years, as the agenda, as they speed it up, they can't conceal it anymore. And by not being able to conceal it anymore, it gives courage to people like Dimitris Yiannopoulos. It gives courage to people like Sandra Fecht, wonderful woman. It gives courage to people like Norbert there to say, well, you know what, enough's enough, you know. I'm going to speak out on this. I'm going to talk about it. I can't deny it any longer. It's exactly 3 minutes to the top of the hour. This is your Richie Allen Show, which is brought to you in association with davidicke.com, Fab Radio 2, the TuneIn app, and of course the terrific alternatecurrentradio.com. My name is Richie Allen. It's Wednesday, February 8th, 2017. You've been tweeting me. Daniel has been tweeting about nanotechnology. Presumably Daniel is talking about you won't have a visible microchip in terms of making payments. It'll be some sort of nanotechnology thing injected into you. That might be what Daniel is saying. And if he is, I think he's on the money. My friend Himanshi, just outside Delhi, after demonetization, she says, and she's up late there, after demonetization, corruption is still going on in India and fake notes are still being printed as though money doesn't even exist. Mark tweets, for feck's sake, mate, they are robbing. It's not theirs. It's not fair, as it's your money, tweets Mark. Thank you, Mark, for that. Spirit Samba tweets, the end goal of these sociopaths is a microchipped population connected to the smart grid. That's right. That's 100% right. And it's not just about global depopulation. As Norbert said, it would be very difficult to bring about global depopulation by that means. Of course, on its own, but alongside everything else that's going on, it's a nice piece of that jigsaw, isn't it, really? Hi to Manrique, by the way. Hi to Fluffles as well. Fair Dinkum, hi. Thanks for listening to the programme. Fair Dinkum tweets, I had my online banking suspended for transferring money to my children. Wow. Wow. A lot of people saying things like that, in fact, on Twitter here. Luga tweets, I think we should abuse the bankers, eh? Now, I like you, Luga, but let's not abuse anybody. You'll never beat them by playing their games. Jim Dale tweets, cash withdrawals over £2,500 require 48 hours notice. You need to state where the funds have come from and why you need cash. That's from Jim Dale. Hi to JP, who tweets, in December, J.S. Rothschild announced the world is seeing a big economic experiment India and the shrinking of the petrodollar. Thanks, JP. And D, my friend, in God's country in Ireland, says, Hewlett-Packard, Richie, not Intel in Kildare, with them job losses, still a kick in the arse. Apparently, several hundred job losses at Hewlett-Packard in Kildare. You know, if I say I'm sorry to hear that, will I sound sincere? I am genuinely. What do you say to that when people are dependent on their job and they find out they're being left go and there's nothing else for them to do? What do you say to that? I have no idea. Also, then I'm sorry and I hope it works out for you. It's going to be interesting in a few minutes when Kevin Barrett comes on. We're at the top of the hour now. Quick break, back in a minute.
Do not risk putting another pound in your bank account until you've heard this message. It's Jim Rickards here, best-selling author of Currency Wars and The Death of Money. But today I'm urging you to claim a free copy of my brand new book, The Road to Ruin. Visit theroadtoruin.co.uk for full details now. Inside, I uncover the financial elite's secret ICE 9 plan to take full control of your hard-earned cash. To see how, visit theroadtoruin.co.uk right away. It's not too late to prepare. Claim your free copy at theroadtoruin.co.uk today.
Looking to arrange a mortgage? Confused by all the deals available? Let Manchester Mortgages do the work for you. Take advantage of our free mortgage review offer throughout February and March and see if we can save you money. We are whole of market brokers with access to hundreds of mortgage schemes across the UK. Call us on 0161 706 0242 or go to manchestermortgages.co.uk. Your home may be repossessed if you do not keep up repayments on your mortgage. Manchester Mortgages are a trading style of mortgages for you, North West Limited, who are authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority.
A place high in the mountains of Spain, a sanctuary where souls gather from all around the globe to learn about themselves and experience powerful changes in the way we see our world. They become awakened to their gifts and their power to heal others. Become part of this ever-growing worldwide family of unique, pure energy healing practitioners. Discover how amazing you truly are. Go to www.markbajerski.com. It could just change your life forever.
Broadcasting the information the mainstream media won't touch. This is the Richie Allen Show in association with DavidIke.com.
Yes, my friend Himanshi mentioned earlier on is thrilled to bits because it looks like David Icke is going to be in India in 2018. And Himanshi is crediting this program with that on Twitter. Himanshi, I'm not known for my modesty. It has nothing to do with the Richie Allen Show whatsoever. I think from the inception of the Worldwide Wake Up Tour, David and Jamie and the gang were always looking at the possibility of going to India because it's such a wonderful country. There are so many people in India alive and awake to this situation and to what's going on. It was always the plan to head to the south of the equator and to head towards India. So I'd like to take some credit for that, but I can't. I know you put that question to David one night when he was on the air yourself, and he was very quick to say if they could do something, they would. It looks like 2018 will be the year. Welcome back to the programme, eh? Are you well? Let me just grab the old diary there. Hang on a second. Dead air doesn't work well on radio.
Doesn't work well at all.
The old diary there. Right. Can't wait. Tomorrow night, Scott Creighton is on the programme. Can't wait to chat with Scott. Known about Scott for a while. He's never been on. He joins me. That's Scott Creighton on the programme tomorrow night. And I'll tell you tomorrow about other guests booked in for tomorrow. Right. Now it's time for some music. Do stay in touch with our broadcast partners, alternatecurrentradio.com, fabradio2, davidike.com and the TuneIn app. I'm very fond of a French artiste, young woman called Zaz. Caroline, the future Mrs. Allen, massive fan of hers. Zaz is amazing. I don't know how you describe her. She's a funky, jazz, postmodern, I don't know, I'm just making all that up. She plays, I don't know, it's some sort of fusion jazz, acid jazz, I don't know what you call it. But it's quite wonderful. This is Zaz. When we come back, Kevin Barrett will be with me. And believe me, you don't want to miss this. Back in exactly 2.5 minutes. After Zaz. Love a bit of Zaz. This is great.
Un peu plus sucré.
Oui.
Un peu plus salé.
Non.
Non, moi je préfère plutôt quand c'est pimenté. Un peu plus grand.
Oui.
Un peu plus court.
Non.
Non, moi je préfère plutôt y aller à pied. Un peu plus clair.
Oui.
Un peu moins cher.
Non.
Non, moi je préfère la montagne à la mer. Un peu plus blanc.
Oui.
Un peu plus noir.
Non.
Non, moi je préfère les gens qui osent y croire.
Great stuff, Zaz and Niwi Nino on the Richie Allen Show in association with DavidIke.com. 8 minutes past the hour. Let's waste no time. Our next guest is a writer, a blogger, a academic of a serious note, multilingual. Could be here all day talking about him. Terrific broadcaster. You can find him on Twitter, seeing as most of our comments are coming in on Twitter. His Twitter handle even is @TruthJihad. That is @TruthJihad. Always a genuine pleasure to welcome back to the programme our friend Kevin Barrett. Kev, welcome back. How are you?
I'm well, Richie. Thank you. Good to be with you.
Good to be with you. We probably could do with 2 or 3 hours here today, you and I, but we've got 45 minutes or thereabouts, 40 minutes. Let's jump straight in there. What's going on with the so-called independent media? What will it take Donald Trump to do before these people accept that they've been had again? Now, I must point out, our mutual friend, cantankerous and all as he is, but we love him, James H. Fetzer, said to me today, I am very upset. This is Jim Fetzer. I will denounce the apparent continuation of the neocon agenda. I am very upset. I appreciate his humility, but he's on his own, Kev, because no matter what Trump does, the so-called independent media, supposedly the war against tyranny, the front lines of the war against tyranny, the front lines of the information war, are supporting this neocon Zionist lunatic who's inhabiting the White House now. What's going on?
Well, Richie, I'm really glad to hear that Jim Fetzer is starting to climb down from that very high and precarious perch that he mounted a while back, singing the praises of Trump. It reminds me a lot of what happened back in 2008 when Jim and so many other people believed Barack Obama's promises that he was bringing hope for change and everything would change now that we had this totally unlike George W. Bush guy in the White House. A lot of my friends, people around me felt that way, voted for Obama, and became gradually disillusioned. But with Trump, frankly, Richie, I'm not sure how anybody even got fooled for a minute. You know, just the guy's demeanor is very, you don't have to watch him talk for very long to notice that there's something really wrong with this guy. And nothing he says really makes a lot of sense. Nothing coherent there. So anyway, long story short here is that I expected that people like Jim Fetzer would once again recognize that they had been had by Donald Trump. And so far, not a whole lot have. So good for Jim.
Good for Jim is absolutely right. I've invited Jim to come back on with me next week and have a chat about it. He's genuinely distressed about it, I think, Jim. Jim is obviously incredibly intelligent. I think, though, you know, Jim's background, he was in the Marines, and I think there's always a part of people like Jim that want to hang on to just that little bit of belief that the means to change things can be found at the ballot box. And, you know, and maybe in 4 years' time, God love Jim, and I don't mean to patronise him because he's incredibly intelligent and he's very important, Jim. But in 4 years' time, God love me, he might be endorsing somebody else. And this is the problem. Is Donald Trump creating an autocracy? Or I'll ask you a better question than that, Kevin. Is Trump being used by the elite to create an autocracy for presidents to come and for presidents forevermore? I'm talking about him basically trying to, with the stroke of a pen, remove the judiciary from process, annihilate the Constitution, put himself in a position where he needs to deal with nobody. He doesn't have to speak with anybody. If he decrees it, therefore it is, therefore it must become law. So that seems like Trump, but is there something else going on behind the scenes? Is he being used to lay the groundwork for basically an autocracy of the future?
I think so, Richie. You know, it's not just Trump, of course. We've had this federalist society dominating the American judiciary for many, many years, and they are dedicated to a kind of a neoconservative reading of the U.S. Constitution, which in a way is actually not just misreading it, but kind of shredding it. You know, these people basically think that the nation needs a kind of a Führer, or, you know, somebody who's above the law. And this follows the political philosophy of Carl Schmitt, who was the number one Nazi philosopher, and his top disciple, and even a more radical disciple, was Leo Strauss, the founder of neoconservatism. Schmitt said that the ideal state to govern in is the state of emergency, because then you don't have all of the parliamentary wrangling and all of the give and take and discussion in the kind of a democratic system where it's messy and it's really hard to unite people in service to a great project. So Schmitt said that, you know, the great projects are all basically war, that politics is the science of enmity, that is, uniting people in hatred of an other. And in order to do that well, you really need to install a state of emergency and abolish the democratic, parliamentary, and republican procedures and have a leader or a Führer. And this is why he was the number one Nazi political philosopher, and he's still maybe the most influential political philosopher of the past century. The neocons totally embraced him by way of Leo Strauss. So they're very dedicated to destroying the foundations of the Enlightenment in terms of democracy and these checks and balances. And Trump is really almost the perfect guy with his out of control ego and his serious case of narcissism and borderline sociopathy. This is the guy who will be very, very happy to install a state of emergency when the time comes. We've already got a state of emergency that's wiped out 90% of the Constitution inherited from the 9/11 false flag operation. So I'm wondering if they're going to do something similar to Trump Tower. You know, they're going to blow up Trump Tower the way they blew up the Twin Towers in Building 7. And that will go after Trump's narcissistic sort of phallic obsession. And he will be outraged, but the country will be in a state of shock. So it would go along with him as he finished off what's left of the Constitution. This is really my great concern. And I just hope that the American people and the media will be awake if and when that happens.
And you know, Kevin, and the reason I've loved speaking to you since we began talking in 2008, 2009, these conversations, they segue off into different avenues and corridors. You've got me thinking there about, there's a new television series, or relatively new, it's on Netflix, Kiefer Sutherland again. This time he's the president. The entire cabinet and all the Senate and Congress has been killed, and he's the president. And again, it's Islamic terror. And I wonder how many of these TV series, and we've seen films like that, DC Must Fall, or I can't remember the name of the film, there's been two, London is Falling, Washington is Falling, whatever it's called, all these scenarios. How much are people being prepared for these types of future false flag attacks, like you described there, one of Trump's big buildings getting blown to pieces, some of Trump's staff being murdered, and then that state of emergency you described, which was the atmosphere, of course, 15 years ago, wasn't it, Kevin, when the Patriot Act, which couldn't be any more unpatriotic. What an incredibly, again, Huxley-esque or Orwellian document and set of laws that was. But people acquiesced to it because we're under attack and these lunatics can kill us at any time. That's what's going on here. It's an absolute assault on the senses of American men and women, from the media, from everywhere, right?
Yeah, absolutely right, Richie. And Trump is surrounded with some of the kinds of people we would expect if that's what he's planning to do. Steve Bannon, who seems to be his Karl Rove, maybe more, is absolutely dedicated to trying to have essentially a World War III style clash of civilizations with the Islamic world. Bannon is a fanatical sort of Christian Zionist holy warrior. He went to the Vatican and he said that, you know, we need to have this, you know, all out kind of fight against Islam. So he's ready to go. And some of these other people around Donald Trump, like his own son-in-law Kushner, who's close to Bibi Netanyahu, as many of these people are. Newt Gingrich has the same kind of attitude. Friedman, this ambassador he appointed to Israel, is even more radical than Bibi Netanyahu. So it looks to me like Trump is pretty much a puppet of the ultra-extremist Zionist faction connected to Netanyahu. And those are precisely the people that did 9/11. And they're probably just about ready to do another one.
And you look at, again, just jumping jumping two different issues, but they're all the same issue, of course. All the dots are all connected here. You know, Trump is in, he's in a few days, and Netanyahu announces a massive settlement expansion plan again. I mean, it doesn't get any more sickening or any more illegal, morally wrong. You can use any adjective you want to describe it. We're going to tell a load of Palestinian men, women and children, we'll give you some money for your land, but there's no debate about it. You're going to get off your land, and we're going to settle Israelis, Jewish people here. All of this in the early days of Trump's presidency. Not a word from anybody associated with Trump. Not a dicky bird, as we would say here in the UK, of condemnation of it. Which leads me to believe, Kevin, that and I'm surprised I got it so badly wrong. Hillary was so disgusting and so evil. She seemed to be perfect to take the NATO plans, the NATO expansion around Russia, further chaos. I believe she was going to be chosen to lead a ground invasion of Syria. All of that. And it should have occurred to me that Trump was the ringer. It was right there in front of us all along. He was the guy. And it never occurred to me. Is it safe to say now that sometime several years ago or a couple of years ago, they decided this is our guy, right?
It seems very likely to me. That's right. As far as the idea that maybe Trump was the peace president, which is, of course, what a lot of folks in the alternative media thought, and some of them still think, I think that illusion was created by political means, precisely in order to get enough of a margin of voters to go for Trump to make it plausible that he could be inserted into the White House. If you look at who was really behind the clash with Russia, it hasn't been Obama and his people or John Kerry, even Hillary, who was one of the more hawkish Democrats, but it was actually people around Victoria Nuland, who is an arch neoconservative and indeed Republican, married to the Kagan family.
Bob Kagan's wife, yeah.
Founding family of sort of modern neoconservatism. And so these are the same people who are now surrounding Trump. And I think that those people engineered the crisis in Ukraine precisely to put pressure on Russia and create these very tensions that would then allow for the kind of situation where they could make Trump out to be a peace candidate, make it appear that he was friendly with Russia. But of course, the real problem, Rishi, isn't so much that Trump is friendly with Russia. It's that he's owned by Bibi Netanyahu through Mikhail Friedman. Mikhail Friedman is the ultimate Russian Jewish Zionist oligarch. You know, out of the seven, I think, was it seven out of the eight original oligarchs who stripped the Soviet Union of all of its wealth when it collapsed. They were already pre-positioned by having organized crime over there. And so these people essentially took over the entire wealth of the Soviet Union in the hands of just, you know, seven, eight guys. And they were virtually all dual citizen Jewish Zionists. And then Putin came to power thanks to Friedman, one of these oligarchs. And this Mikhail Friedman used to deliver bags full of cash to Putin when Putin was mayor of Moscow. He basically owns Putin. He made Putin. Now, interestingly, Friedman had a server that was directly connected to the Donald Trump campaign server during the election campaign. So that connection with Moscow was actually a connection to Bibi Netanyahu by way of Netanyahu's close friend and associate, Mikhail Friedman.
Kevin, this is incredible stuff. Kevin has written a brilliant article for Veterans Today, published today, called The Zionist Christian Alliance and the Great Deception. Check it out. I'm going to tweet a link to it out now. Kevin is at Truth Jihad on Twitter. I'm following Kevin there. Follow Kevin at Truth Jihad is Kevin on Twitter. Scott Creighton is on the program tomorrow night. He's written an absolutely fantastic article. Speaking of brilliant articles, he's written a fantastic article today about the whopper of, and you know, I've given up, Kevin. I used to try to at least maintain some level or levels of objectivity talking about this because of my commercial mainstream media background, but I can't anymore. The Amnesty International report yesterday and the cartoon that went with it, alleging that the Assad government and its army have murdered 13,000 people in the last few years and were hanging 50 at a time, two times a week, was such utter monumental bullshit. It's untrue. And Scott's written an unbelievably brilliant, detailed article and basically brought it down to, you know, that nobody was murdered in this way anyway by the Syrian government at Saidnaya prison since 2011, and basically showed that Amnesty were telling tall tales by claiming that their sources were human rights groups in Syria, which are not actually based in Syria, they're based here in the United Kingdom as well. I pointed out yesterday, a lot of people missed this, I was surprised because I'm no genius, you know, I'm just very good at research. Amnesty has been taking money from the UK and the US government since the mid-2000s. How in the name of Christ, excuse the blasphemy, could anybody believe that Amnesty is in any way impartial in making these claims against Syria? But they offered no evidence, Kev, none whatsoever. I leave anger to one side. Do you know what terrifies me? The ramping up of all this bullshit about Syria leads me to believe one of two things will happen. Thing one is they're going to partition Syria like Korea. Or two, there's going to be a ground invasion. What do you think?
I hope it's none of the above, but it does look like things are headed in that direction. There's another area where Trump has not yet come through with the kinds of implicit campaign promises to reach a settlement. You know, he said that Assad wasn't such a bad guy, that he would work with Putin and this sort of thing. And yet, right as he assumed office, there was a conference over in Astana, Kazakhstan, and this was essentially all of the important players in this conflict, minus the people who shouldn't even be there in the first place, like NATO and the U.S. and Israel. So the important players, that would be Syria is number one by far, and then Russia and Iran and so on, and Turkey. These players were all set to actually come up with a solution. And rather than supporting that, as you would think that the new Trump administration would, the U.S. policy has just continued as before. We're still throwing Humvees at ISIS, the delivery to the so-called, nice Syrian rebels of a huge shipment of these armored vehicles went through well after Trump was in office and right after this Astana conference. And those armored vehicles, of course, are not going to be held by any friendly rebels. They're going straight to ISIS and al-Nusra. And so we're not seeing any executive orders from Trump stopping the arming of ISIS. He even said that Obama created ISIS. Well, why doesn't he end ISIS by ending American support for ISIS? Well, I guess that's not on his agenda.
It's certainly not on his agenda, or the people who control him on their agenda either. You say, Kev, that you hope none of the above is the scenario, but it's inevitable, Kevin, isn't it? Because Russia have managed to put a massive wrench in the machine, in the wheels of the neocon Zionist lunatic plan for Syria. That's what Russia have done. Now listen, guys like you and me, I think the similarity we have is there's no bullshit here. We know that oligarchs are bad. We know that Vladimir Putin is not a nice guy. We know the KGB are not nice people. We know that basically in any country, no matter what it is, Russia or Greece or anywhere, you have corruption, you have tyranny. That's the way it is. But you got to call it the way it is. Russia, whatever the internal machinations, whatever the internal problems with their politics are not a threat to global security and to the peace on planet Earth. They are not, however much of a scumbag Putin might be. And I've got problems with him. You got to be honest about that. And there's opposition leader being done for embezzlement today. That smells a bit as well. Let's be honest about it. I don't know. Now, he might be dirty. He might be, but it smells a bit. You got to call it the way it is. Russia have done what they've done quite rightly to protect their own interests. And it's helped, thank God, the Assad government from being overrun by the Wahhabi nutters and eventually the imposition of a US puppet in Syria. But because of that, Kevin, because there's no way the US, Israeli, French, British criminals are going to get their way in Syria, they can only choose one of the above. Partition the country or say, we can't let him continue to hang innocent people, Kev. Therefore, we've got to go in. And I hate to say it, sometime this year, mate, or even into early 2018, it's going to be one or the other, in my opinion.
Well, I think a de facto partition is pretty much already there in certain respects. As far as actually sending in U.S. or Western ground troops, that's always possible. I mean, I would hope not, but, that very likely would lead to World War III, as Russia and Iran are not going to stand for that. The real aim here, though, of course, is not to really own Syria or control Syria and impose some kind of pro-Western stability on Syria. This is the propaganda line they keep feeding us. That's what they said they were going to do in Iraq. They were going to stabilize Iraq and make it a happy democratic system and a country that loved Israel, and they would welcome us with flowers and all this stuff. But of course, the real purpose of the Iraq war was to utterly and completely destroy Iraq as a functioning modern country with technology and education, because such a country threatens Israel. So they've poisoned it with depleted uranium. Babies are being born with horrific deformities all over the country.
Yes.
The Israeli Mossad went in there and murdered, through assassination, the top 200 or 300 Iraqi scientists in a kind of an intellectual genocide to make sure that Iraq would never come back and be a country that could threaten Israel. They've also destroyed a number of other countries. Libya is the obvious one. That country is just busted up into pieces now. A bunch of warlords pretty much run it. Sudan has had its resource-rich south split off. It's occupied by Israeli interests that are stripping it of its resources in the south. And it's, of course, the situation for the innocent civilians who were in bad shape before is even worse now. But you never hear about it, because all of that human rights propaganda about Sudan was all designed to destroy Sudan and make it even worse. The game plan here, Richie, is for the Zionists to destroy every country in the region that could have any possibility of posing a threat to Israel 10, 20, 30, 50 years down the line. That's what this is really about. They've basically admitted it. General Clark told us that 9/11 was all about destroying seven countries in 5 years.
Absolutely.
They're a little bit behind schedule, but not that much.
Absolutely. And if anybody wants any proof, look at the Israeli flag from the Euphrates to the Nile. It's right there in front of you, you know, and people can say whatever they want. I couldn't give a damn. It's the truth. My friend Terry Howell in Salford has reminded you and I that a film tipped to do very well in the Oscars is a film called Patriot Day, starring Kevin Bacon, based on the Boston bombing. Kevin, whenever I hear about the Boston bombing and whenever I hear about this particular film, my blood boils with rage, because I interviewed the director of several television series and a couple of low-budget films who knew one of the crisis actors who was involved in the so-called Boston bombing, which is the absolute, in my opinion anyway, it's the definition of a hoax, that, where nobody was hurt, where everybody purporting to be injured or hurt was actually playing a part. Now, I don't know about other so-called hoaxes. I think Sandy Hook is, you know, an absolute ringer as well. But films like that, Kevin, this is how they're getting to people. This is how they're selling this common agenda, isn't it? You know, reminding people that there are people hanging around street corners, hell-bent on blowing themselves up and killing you as well. And they're rewriting history with films like Patriot Day. These films are going straight to the top of the box office charts. They're in every Cineplex and multiplex in the country. And people are walking out of those cinemas and have been brainwashed, right? How do you counter that, Kev? What do you do about that?
Well, I've been trying to counter this stuff since I woke up to 9/11 being an inside job back in 2003. And I could use some help from people with serious money and media reach. It's amazing that, you know, there's basically only been one guy with serious money who ever tried to spread the truth about 9/11. And that was Jimmy, what's his name? My mind is losing Jimmy's last name, right? Jimmy Walter. Yeah, Jimmy Walter. And, you know, he bought full page ads in the New York Times and the Washington Post. And then suddenly he was getting terrible threats and his home was attacked and vandalized. And he ended up having to flee the country and withdrawing from the 9/11 truth fight. So maybe that's why none of these Silicon Valley billionaires who are so worried about Trump founding a new Nazi Reich are actually going to do what it would take to stop that, which would be spreading the truth about these things. But you're right, Richie. I get furious whenever I see these Hollywood films, you know, Zero Dark Thirty and these various terror propaganda films that are way beyond anything that the Nazi propagandists ever dreamed of. And you're right. The Boston bombing obviously was a false flag. Whether anybody got hurt and how hurt, I'm not sure. But yeah, there are some indications that it might have been a theatrical production. In any case, the Tsarnaev brothers most certainly were innocent and convicted of a crime. Well, the younger brother was convicted of a crime he never could have committed. And we had other people murdered to keep it all hushed up, including Totoro, the friend of the older Tsarnaev brother, who was executed point blank with a shot to the head from, you know, right up against the skull from behind while he was in FBI custody. And that's a heck of a shot, you know, trying to escape kind of scenario.
Imagine that.
And in fact, he was silenced. Yeah. So the Boston bombing is a clearly a false flag atrocity, and just one more in a long list of false flag atrocities. So, Richie, why doesn't the alternative media get that they have brainwashed us into imagining that there's some kind of Islamic threat to the homeland when there is no such threat? If there were, they wouldn't have to invent all of these bogus terror.
No, they wouldn't. Do you know what, Kevin? When I used to go to school, my teachers used to cotton on very quick to the same lame old excuses. You know, the dog ate my essay. My mum accidentally threw my essay out with a pile of magazines. All that old bullshit. But my neighbours and my friends never seemed to tire of the same old story. We found a passport at the scene, and that led us to the suspect's, usually the deceased suspect's apartment. And in the apartment, Kev, we found all the plans for the attack. When will people get tired of the same bullshit story being told to them, because it's not even, you know, it would be a joke if there were just some glaring similarities. It's not similarities. Every time one of these things happens, it is the exact same story. It was a loner. The police knew about him. He was a petty criminal. He was a loner. He left his passport at the scene. And then when we searched his apartment, I mean, Kevin, this attack at the Louvre, I can never say that properly. My missus would be ashamed of me. The Louvre Museum. This guy, wearing an Italian soccer jersey and a pair of trainers, just ran like an idiot at armed to the teeth French soldiers, and then got shot. And then they found in his bag, they found a machete and they found this and all that. When will people wake up, Kevin? What will it take for people to look at it and look again at the news and go, ah, come on. Ah, come on. You don't expect me to buy this every time. Or will people just continue to keep buying it, Kevin?
Well, Richie, there does seem to be, on the surface anyway, a backlash against Trump in the mainstream media. So there's a little part of me that maybe hasn't given up hope completely that they might actually do their jobs at some point and expose a big false flag in a timely way. You know, with 9/11, for example, the mainstream media did report all sorts of facts that are just so damning to the official story, but they never put them in context and they never really made it obvious and unavoidable for their readers that this is what was going on. For example, the German media, the biggest German media, all did report about the magic passport of Mohammed Atta, which was discovered in Hamburg, I believe, by a good Samaritan burglar. Some guy burglarized an apartment, found this suitcase of Mohammed Atta's containing all sorts of incriminating information about him that was used for the whole 9/11 official story. And this burglar delivered the suitcase to the German police. And, you know, that's just the most absurd concocted story. And the, I think it was Der Spiegel that first reported this. And they even reported that the German police know that this was no burglar. This was an intelligence agent. And the only question is, which intelligence agency? That was all reported by Der Spiegel. And then they put it in their book about 9/11, which doesn't even question the official story. And you know, there's the other magic suitcase of Mohammed Atta, the one that was planted on the plane, the commuter flight from Portland, Maine to Boston, Massachusetts, that Atta supposedly took on the morning of 9/11. He made that, you know, why he would take a transfer flight rather than just flying out of Boston. He was in Boston the day before. Why didn't he just fly out of Boston? No, he had to drive up to Portland, Maine and catch a commuter flight. Anyway, his suitcase goes on the commuter flight. And then for no evident reason, it just happens to not make the transfer to doomed Flight 11. So Atta supposedly, according to the official story, goes into the Trade Tower in a big fireball. But his suitcase is magically discovered at Boston's Logan Airport, full of incriminating evidence, including his ludicrous last will and testament that begins not with Bismillah Rahman Rahim, which is the way Muslims begin things, but rather in the name of God, myself and my family. That's what they reported. This is so ludicrous, and yet this is the only source of evidence for the official story. That's where they got the 19 names, although it was the wrong 19 names for the first few days. And the media just won't touch this stuff. But if Trump tries something like this, maybe they will touch it. There's a part of me that says, look, these people in the media and a lot of the political class here in the U.S. they're freaking out about Trump. They know what he's capable of. He's not subtle at all. And so maybe if he tries something, or if, you know, the people behind him try something, the folks who aren't on board with it in the mainstream will push back. I certainly hope so. And that's one of the reasons I keep doing the work I'm doing, in hopes that they won't keep getting away with this stuff.
Brilliant, Kev. My friend and colleague, Jean Ann Crowley, who is a very good actress, tweets this. Or emails this, I should say. I think they began using more and more crisis actors because of mothers. After 9/11, the mothers of people who had really died just wouldn't give up, which really annoyed the powers that be and threatened their story, in inverted commas, because they were relentless in pursuit of the truth. Mothers, because mothers never give up, and as we know, that can be quite annoying. That's an excellent point, that, as to why they might begin to use crisis actors. And talk about crisis actors, the guy at Sandy Hook was laughing and joking with the camera, with people, just before he comes on camera to talk about his son, and then his demeanour completely changes, and he goes into this very sorrowful speech to the media. Keep the tweets and emails coming in. It's at Richie Allen Show on Twitter. Kevin Barrett is our guest. Go to at Truth Jihad. And Kevin, give us the link to your radio show, by the way.
Well, you can find my radio show and everything else I do pretty much by way of truthjihad.com. That's all run together, Truth Jihad. And, you know, Richie, you mentioned that, the implausible performance by the Sandy Hook victim's father. Well, you know, we have a similar case with the Orlando shooting. That was the basis of my most recent edited book, which is called Orlando False Flag, The Clash of Histories. So Orlando False Flag, you can find that on the internet. And one of the many items indicating that that was another of these staged provocations is the laughing policeman. Remember the laughing policeman?
The laughing policeman. Yeah.
Yeah. They're having a very somber sort of funeral ceremony honoring the fallen in this worst massacre in the history of Orlando. And they all pretty much have the right face for that, or close enough anyway, except for the one guy who's like laughing and nudging and winking. And, you know, maybe he wasn't aware that he was on camera or what, but it's quite telling.
It is quite telling, Kev. It is. So truthjihad.com, follow Kev, it's at truthjihad. This is very important stuff. I'm going to read a few tweets, and let me just scroll down there. Some of you have been tweeting the photographs of the fake, the fake leg, the Boston bombing, that famous picture of the guy in the wheelchair, which for me gave the game away.
And that's Carlos.
That's right, Kevin, thanks. I used to be very, very reticent to acknowledge that these things were, you know, basically what they are, because I was worried at one stage about, you know, not so much losing the audience, but that it would be difficult for people to listen to the program. And we're always trying to get people who ordinarily think we're crazy to listen to us. And I was very reluctant to talk about crisis actors. There was a time when I wouldn't talk about it, in fact. I never censored anybody at all, but I wouldn't go there. And if anybody went there, I would just, you know, I would kind of be quiet on that. But Dee tweets, Kevin is a fantastic guest. This is proper information. Mark tweets, it's the old phrase, you can elect but never select the candidates. That's absolutely right. They give you a choice every single time. Fluffles tweets, I had a court summons once, but I had no loo roll. Honest fact. Richie there says Fluffles. Himanshi tweets out pictures of the same woman used. Apparently, I don't know if this is true, but they might have used the same woman to be a crisis actor at Sandy Hook and Boston. I don't know if that's true. Kevin, how much do we have to be careful that when these false flag staged events happen, that the system behind them throws out crazy stuff as well, in the hope that we jump on it and use it as evidence, when in fact it isn't evidence, and then they can point the finger and say, look at those crazy bastards, Kevin Barrett and Richie Allen and David Icke. How much of that do we have to be aware of?
Well, a lot of it, and it's worse than that, Richie, actually. Not only are they putting out completely crazy, untrue stuff for us to latch onto so they can discredit us when we simply, you know, point out what it looks like, but they actually do things in such a way that if you tell the truth about it, it sounds crazy. So it's a really tough situation to be in. You know, one of those things that they may very well be actually doing that sounds crazy and keeps us marginalized when we talk about it, indeed, is this crisis actors thing that you're talking about. Just by talking about these apparent crisis actors, they have a great propaganda approach. All they have to do is say that we are dishonoring these victims, and we are, you know, really hurting them, and it's so cruel, and we're taunting the victims. This is what Posner has been doing. This Posner guy, who is the father of Noah Posner, the Sandy Hook victim, or whatever you want to call him. I'm not 100% sure in most of these cases, so I'm not going to start saying, yeah, I know that this guy didn't get killed. I don't know for sure, but that Posner guy really looks suspicious to me. And he's been used as the point man for the pushback against people who are questioning Sandy Hook, and indeed for the whole truth movement, really. And it's, you know, he's the gift that keeps on giving for the propagandists. And just today's Los Angeles Times, I believe it is, There's a big story about how terrible it is for poor Mr. Posner. It's bad enough to lose your child in a massacre, but when the crazy conspiracy theorists start taunting you, it's even worse. And so this is their favorite propaganda technique, and they used this to fire a fully tenured professor in Florida,
That's
James
right.
Tracy. They got him involved in back and forth with Posner, and they were able to use that to make it look as though this evil, crazy James Tracy was dishonoring and taunting this poor father who'd lost his kid at Sandy Hook. So we have to be careful about this. And that's one of the reasons I go a little bit easy on the crisis actor thing myself. I don't want to hand the other side any easy propaganda. But at the same time, you still have to tell the truth as you see it. And, you know, another example, actually, of this was that whole story about the guy, James Wesley Howell, who was arrested after the Orlando massacre in Los Angeles. The story went, he turned himself into the Los Angeles police. He had a trunk full of weapons and bombs. He was going to massacre people at the gay pride parade right after the Sandy Hook massacre, the Orlando massacre in Florida. And then he saw that Omar Mateen, the patsy in the Orlando massacre, had been killed, and he was afraid he was going to be killed too. So he turned himself into police, and then the FBI took him and he disappeared. So that was the story that came out right after the Orlando massacre. And I did report that in my edited book, Orlando False Flag. But I reported it with a certain arm's length distance. Like, we don't really know what the facts are about this yet. This is just what's been reported. As it turns out, James Wesley Howell has indeed been treated normally. He wasn't kidnapped and disappeared by the FBI. And it's not at all clear that the story that where he said he and Omar Mateen trained with the CIA to do these massacres is true. That actually looks like it very likely was a planted story designed to make us look bad. One of the many items of evidence, these false leads that they throw out there. So long story short, Richie, they're not only doing crazy things that make us look crazy if we talk about them, but then they're also throwing out false leads for us. So our work is cut out for us.
Yeah, because they're not stupid. You know, evil, sick, and bent, you know, bent as in corrupt as they are, they're not stupid. D tweets, Richie, ask Kevin, has he seen a new TV program broadcast on CBS which attempts to reinforce the mainstream narrative on Sandy Hook and 9/11, etc.? I wasn't aware of it, Kev, but apparently CBS are running, according to Dee, a series of programs designed to remind people that these were seriously bad things that happened. Are you aware of that?
No, I haven't caught those, but thank you for letting me know. I'll look into that.
I mean, we saw the BBC did Conspiracy Files here in the UK, which was a disgrace. It was an affront to journalism. They did 7/7. They did September the 11th, amongst one or two other things, and purported to be a serious and a very fair and objective examination of the facts. And of course, they were just hit pieces on everybody associated with the 9/11 truth movement. There were hit pieces on everybody asking questions about the 7th of July. You're never going to get, I mean, when you hear CBS is going to have a serious look at Sandy Hook, it's just absolute garbage. It's going to be a hit piece on people like Wolfgang Halbig, who I've had on programs for the last few years, TV in London here. I've turned Wolfgang upside down, and I can only conclude the man is as honest as the day is long. A school safety inspector nationally, a highway patrol officer, from his home, from his living room, from his den, with a beer in his hand, he looked at Sandy Hook and he thought it stank, and he's come out and he's asking questions about it ever since. There's no way these programs are going to do a proper investigative piece on these things. They're just going to try and make guys like Wolfgang Halbig, guys like Kevin Barrett and others look like idiots. That's what they do, Kev, right?
Oh, yeah, and worse, they actually get people fired from their jobs, as happened to James Tracy. And now we've seen Tony Hall suspended from his teaching job at the University of Lethbridge for asking hard questions about these kinds of issues. We've seen Joy Kariga fired at Oberlin College for simply mentioning my book on social media. So you're not even supposed to acknowledge that this material exists. And to me, that's not what the Academy is for. You know, the Western Academy, you know, we're supposedly an Enlightenment culture. We're supposed to be using critical thinking to take apart the social myths and to expose the powers that be. That's what I was brought up as. You know, they told me that was my job. That's one of the reasons I went into the Academy, was to do that. And now it appears that these various hoaxes are being created precisely by these neoconservatives who don't believe in the Enlightenment. They don't believe in having an open academy. They believe that public myths, as Philip Zelikow calls them, should be inculcated in the population. People should be brainwashed by these myths, and that the elite, that is the neocons, should be the only people who know what's really going on. So I think they're systematically taking down critical thinking and free reporting, independent journalism, and especially the free academy, and they're terrorizing professors towing the line.
You know what, Kev? Final word on this, because we're just out of time. Everything you describe there is as eloquently as only you can, from where you come from, I should say, leads to what you have in France at the moment, which is martial law. The French are quite happily going along about their business alongside the Seine in Paris and in inner city Paris, going about their business, surrounded by thousands and thousands of soldiers. Quite happily, Kev. That's what it leads to. That sort of brainwashing is martial law, a police state. And imagine, you'd never have believed. And people can say what they want about the French. I know my history. I know what the French are like. The French are incredible at standing up to authority and not taking it. They are acquiescing, Kev, to martial law, right?
It looks that way. It's really sad. There are some dissident voices. It was great to see that Garrett Coleman, the Irishman who's been ensconced in Paris for quite some time, got more than 1 million hits almost instantly when he called out that November 2015 right. Paris false flag on RT. And there are a number of other brave voices of truth coming out of France, although I don't agree with all of them. Like Thierry Meyssan actually likes Trump at this point. So, you know, anybody can get misguided. But yeah, the population in France is just as badly brainwashed as the less educated population here in the U.S. So maybe those brilliant French intellectuals that we all admire from afar are not quite as smart as we always thought they were.
Kevin, I could talk to you all night, mate. I always say that whenever we've spoken, we could go on forever. Thanks so much for your time today. Go to truthjihad.com, folks. You'll find Kevin's shows there. He's outstanding, and you can read him at Veterans Today, and do follow him on Twitter. I follow him there, even though he doesn't follow me back. I'm only joking. I don't care about things like that. It's at Truth Jihad on Twitter. But then again, I must do if I mention it. No, I don't.
Okay, I'll go follow you right now.
Throw that in there as a gag, Kev. We can't be slaves to this social media nonsense. Brilliant to chat with you. We will, of course, do it again real soon. Thank you, my friend. Have a great day.
Okay, thank you, Richie.
Brilliant. Kevin Barrett on the line to us there from Wisconsin. We're going to take a quick break. When I come back, I am going to read a few tweets. Then, I'm afraid we'll be wrapping up.
Do not risk putting another pound in your bank account until you've heard this message. It's Jim Rickards here, best-selling author of Currency Wars and The Death of Money. But today I'm urging you to claim a free copy of my brand new book, The Road to Ruin. Visit theroadtoruin.co.uk for full details now. Inside, I uncover the financial elite's secret ICE-9 plan to take full control of your hard-earned cash. To see how, visit theroadtoruin.co.uk right away. It's not too late to prepare. Claim your free copy at theroadtoruin.co.uk today.
Looking to arrange a mortgage? Confused by all the deals available? Let Manchester Mortgages do the work for you. Take advantage of our free mortgage review offer throughout February and March and see if we can save you money. We are whole of market brokers with access to hundreds of mortgage schemes across the UK. Call us on 0161 706 0242 or go to manchestermortgages.co.uk. Your home may be repossessed if you do not keep up repayments on your mortgage. Manchester Mortgages are a trading style of mortgages for you, North West Limited, who are authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority.
There's a place high in the mountains of Spain, a sanctuary where souls gather from all around the globe to learn about themselves and experience powerful changes in the way we see our world. They become awakened to their gifts and their power to heal others. Become part of this ever-growing worldwide family of unique, pure energy healing practitioners. Discover how amazing you truly are. Go to www.markbayerski.com. It could just change your life forever.
All eyes on Manchester. Saturday, March 4th, 2017. The Awakening at Bowler's Exhibition Centre, Manchester. World-leading ufologists, ancient alien theory experts, spiritual workers, and truth seekers descend into Manchester Join the stars of the Ancient Aliens TV series and the leading figures in the field of ufology and ancient alien theories. Eric Von Daniken, author of the hit book Chariots of the Gods, and Emmy Award winner Linda Moulton Howe will present together for the first time in the UK. In between talks on UFOs, truth about Stonehenge, energy work, spirituality, life-sized UFO, live interview with an alien. And if that's not enough, realign your spirit and soul in our meditation and healing dome. Join us Saturday, March 4th as we seek the answers. Get tickets now at www.awakeningufo.com.
For critical information ignored by the mainstream media, log on to davidicke.com/headlines now.
Yeah, please do that. Check out davidicke.com. Do also visit alternatecurrentradio.com. Terrific, terrific platform. FabRadioInternational.com. We are Fab Radio 2 and very proud of it as well. And we're on the TuneIn app. I can't tell you how much I enjoyed the programme. We're talking about very serious things. But Norbert Hering from Frankfurt in Germany was absolutely fantastic in the first hour. And Kevin Barrett is a genius. I'll never forget the first time I came across Kevin going toe-to-toe with Sean Hannity on Fox News and taking Hannity to the cleaners, literally. Back in the day when these guys were doing their best to cover up the glaring inaccuracies in the official story of 9/11. And by the way, when you talk about 9/11 or September the 11th to your friends and they tell you it's a load of bollocks, you remind them that Thomas Keane, the chairman of the 9/11 Commission, Thomas Keane and Lee Hamilton, Keane wrote a book in 2004 or 2005, maybe even 2006, when Keane basically acknowledged that the 9/11 Commission was set up to fail. $3 million given to investigate September the 11th. A few years earlier, $50 million was allocated to investigate whether or not an intern performed oral sex on President Bill Clinton. Do you think somebody didn't want the truth about 9/11 to come out? $3 million. There you go, boy. $3 million. Go and tell us what happened. Loads of tweets about false flag and crisis actors, so we'll leave it there. Just as I'm about to go off air, Anne Selly has sent me a story from RT. Apparently, RT reporting, I don't know how true this is, I'm just about to go off air, several people have been injured after fire broke out at the French capital's Place d'Italie metro station following a loud explosion. But apparently it was electrical failure. That's what they're saying now. So there was an explosion at the French, at the metro in Paris, but apparently that explosion has been tied to electrical failure. Okay, I can't say any more than that because that's all I know. Thank you, Anne, for the tweet. I really appreciate that. The programme has been produced, edited and introduced by myself, Richie Allen. Thank you, Aaron Callan and Simon Stewart. Talk to you tomorrow. Bye for now.
We have all the time in the world. Time enough for life to unfold all the precious things love has in store. We have all the love in the world. If that's all we have, you will find we need nothing more. Every step of the way, nothing more, nothing less. Oh.